like
the thing is for me, I feel like something's successful if I don't necessarily have a use case for it, but care about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have a use case for pineapple and naked, but I don't use them.
Why not? Also, I don't know where you want this conversation to head, because the one that we've been having already is really good. So I don't know what you feel like.
I think we can talk about that. Like we can continue what we're talking about, and maybe that tweet.
Which tweet?
The tweet that landed me here. The frustration, openly being frustrated on Twitter about trying to do something and then just having it not work out the way I thought. Maybe we can start there, then we can go back to, the product.
The product. Kind
of thing. Yeah.
Well, maybe, I've wanted to have a conversation with a developer, right?
Okay.
And this conversation is really around building product.
Okay.
I think that it's deeply misunderstood how complicated and also I think when people say, I want to build an app, they think it's just something that's just going to... Like, they think of it the way that you think of designing, like, a poster for an event. No one thinks deeply and meaningfully about, hey, you're going into a space that you might not understand. And it's not as simple as, okay, I think that people should get groceries delivered to their house and you can just build one thing and it's just going to be quick and easy and like, okay, I'm going to start over. Please lock this.
Okay.
That shoot. Just that shoot. Because I am worried that someone will just like barge in. Okay, we're going to start over. But we're going to start on that tangent, if it's cool.
No, that's perfect. I have a lot to say about that.
Yo, I am, okay. We're going to start over now.
Cool.
Should I just let this run? Yeah, I think I'll just let this run. Just need to make sure that it's recording the right way, because I don't want problems.
Okay.
Get comfortable.
Yeah, I'm comfortable.
You need, is that where you're sitting?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, cool. Do that. Just to make sure. Cool. So, thank you so much for coming, by the way. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
Cool.
Really, really excited.
I think it's deeply misunderstood how complicated, but also how much talent it takes to actually build great products. What do you think is something that people don't understand about what it takes to build tech products, especially in South Africa and like with the challenges that we might have?
Look, I think it's a very difficult question, right? Because you need to understand two things, right? Technology is a complex problem, right? And it's a complex system, right? Technology is complex because when you talk about technology, you could be talking about an app. So from software to hardware and all of those things. And human beings are another complex system. Mm. So you've got a complex system acting on another complex system, right? And then factor in the fact that we live in a third world country, where everyone's just trying to survive.
Something that we just don't admit enough.
Yeah, we act like we live in a first world country.
That's because everything around us looks that way.
But it doesn't even look that way. I mean, like, what is it? Jack Dorsey spent some time, is it Uganda?
Uganda, Ghana, Nigeria.
But we look at those countries and we think we're better, if we're being honest, right?
Yeah.
And at least in the sphere of tech, we're not.
Yeah.
Because they're clearly doing better than us. I mean...
By what metric, though? Because, firstly, I do agree with you, right? Like, I do think that it is underdocumented how much is happening across the continent that has nothing to do with South Africans and would probably humble us just a little bit to understand, like, the vastness of the talent and the type of products that are coming out from, like, these incredible countries, like, up north.
Yeah, look, I think the number one measure of success right now is unicorns, right? It's the easy one in tech. They're producing a lot of unicorns. Mm. I mean, you look at the likes of Flutterwave and Paystack, and we're depending on the products that they're building for us to build our products. Mm. Like, we don't have things that people deeply care about at that level yet, right? And that's because building product is difficult for multiple reasons. So back to the complex system acting on a complex system. Number one, you have, you know, you have Thabo from the corner house who wants an app, right? He wants an Uber Eats-like app, right? And that's all he knows. And he knows that you're a developer and he has 20 grand. So he comes to you and he says, VT, I want you to build me this app. I just want to deliver groceries. But instead of delivering groceries in Centurion and around Sandton, I want to do it in Mamelodi. And then as a developer, you know, you're trying to line your pockets, get some more money as well. So you also underestimate how difficult it is. Because there's the other side, by the way, right? We normally focus on how people who want the products don't understand technology. But developers are too obsessed with just the technology and don't go as far as to understand like the business intent and the other side of it. I mean, there's marketing, there's product market fit, there's how to test the idea, the feasibility or something like that. So I'll give you a real life example. I think last year I was approached by two people, right? Completely different types of approaches to testing the business. I think the one guy is the scooter guy, right? And he, I've always admired what he's doing. And, you know,
is this Figile?
I think that's his name.
Yeah, it's Figile, yeah.
He approached Mukondli and then Mukondli pulled me in and, you know, he wanted to build like this delivery thing. He wanted to use WhatsApp, right, to get orders. And all he wanted was like a payment system. And I said, look, I don't really have the time to do that because, you know, how do I benefit? I need to get like a percentage of a percentage of the transaction. I'm like, I don't think it's worth my time right now. But I saw him like go ahead with it and be successful, right? And he took like the path of least resistance. And I think that's because he understands the business. Then you look at another guy who approached me and sent me an email, found my, you know, my email from a friend, wants an app like Uber Eats, like Mr. Delivery.
But he wanted...
But he wants to focus on delivery. So he wants to build Zulzi, right? And I sent him an email. I spent my time and I asked him questions, right? I'm like, cool. So what you're looking at there is you're looking at some sort of interface for drivers or, you know, the people doing the buying.
Looking at multiple products. It's not just one.
It's not one product, right? Yeah. It's like at least four. At the very least, right? That's before you plug in things like data and trying to understand people's habits and all of that. Like, okay, cool. You know, you need a driver network. Do you have an idea for how you're going to do that, right? Is there an existing company you're going to work with, or are you going to establish something for yourself? Do you have the capital to do that, right? Then you need to have something for, you know, for the shops as well, an interface for the shops to load their products. You need an interface for the customer who wants to browse through the catalog and all of that. And you need to have all the systems communicate. On top of that, then there's complexities. Are you going to allow people to buy groceries from multiple shops? Right. So can I buy from Checkers and Pick and Pay? Or am I restricted to one? What happens if the item I want is not there or not the price that I thought it was, right? How are you going to handle refunds, right? You know, if something's broken when it's delivered to my house, how are you gonna? And people don't know, right? Like they just don't know the answer to this, and the result, you didn't answer me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, because you asked a lot of questions that you might have like not had the answers to, right? And it's mainly because it's like, I think so much is hidden from consumers in the end experience of most of these like on-demand services because all I see is me ordering food on Uber. Yeah. I don't think about the fact that, okay, if I order food on Uber, it needs to go to a store. That store needs to process that and then it activates the driver and the driver connects then to me.
Yes.
And there's so many steps of things that have to happen for one successful transaction. Do you think that also makes it very, very hard for people to care or have any empathy for startups that are building products that are imperfect? Because if you don't communicate like the complexity of all of that, I don't care as an end consumer. All I care about is having a great experience. I don't care about the fact that this has to have four different elements and this connects to that person. So that lack of empathy might come from, hey, I've never seen the whole thing.
But I can't expect you to care. I don't care about cars, right? I want to know that I go into my car and drive to my destination, right? Mm. I'm not obsessed with cars, right? If I could live without a car, I would, right? And I thought Uber was that. It's not, maybe not, you know, it's getting expensive. But I don't care enough about cars that I need to make sure that after a specific amount of time, I trade in my car so that I have a newer car that, you know, is still within like the maintenance plan and all of that. Because when it breaks, I don't want to look under the hood, right? And expecting people to care about what hard work goes into your product is irrational, right? Because people buy into products because it simplifies their lives. People buy into products because it feels like an extension of who they are, right? When I decide to order something from my phone, as opposed to me driving to the shop, like I'm doing like a cost benefit analysis.
Yeah.
Is it worth it? Am I happy to pay $20 for someone else to come and deliver the food to my door, as opposed to just me getting up and doing it? And if your product feels like a lot of work, like I need to labor and I need to have empathy for who you are and how you build it, and all, it's too much work. Then I'd rather not.
That responsibility shouldn't be on the consumer or the end user, right?
That's not why products exist. Products exist because society needs something, right? And if I have to labor to use your product, then you failed. And maybe it's early, right? But you haven't succeeded yet, right? And the thing is that like people first of all underestimate the amount of work that would go into a product, but people also don't always think about the fact that a product is supposed to solve a problem or provide some sort of value to people. So they want others to be forgiving instead of solving the problem. And in my experience, a lot of the problems that we have, at least in this country, can be solved by leveraging other technologies or other products as opposed to building something from the ground up.
Yeah. And maybe this goes into like a question I had around, you know, what are the right, if there is right versus wrong motivations for trying to build a product, what would you say are the things that you really look out for? Is like, okay, this person's definitely got the right motivations, and those motivations will sustain them when things get really, really hard, because they will get hard in the process of trying to build any type of product or a startup or a small business. What do you look at as being like the right sort of motivations that can sustain someone in that process and that journey?
I think a lot of the why you're doing it, I think people, like building product is hard, right? Actually doing anything is hard. If you look at the podcast right now, like you put in a lot of work into the people you want to bring into your studio, what you want to do, what you want to talk about, and the kind of impact this will have on the audience, your listeners, right? Product is the same thing. It's about how do you service that need, right? And when you start a podcast, you don't start writing software for recording podcasts and distributing it, and what you leverage was there, right? I think that's the mistake that a lot of us make. Is, you know, as engineers, we have, you know, what's called a not built here syndrome, right? So instead of solving the problem, we start, you know, like we start building this thing from the ground up. And if you flip that around and you don't do technology for the technology's sake, right, you start to look at the problem differently. I personally believe that a business, a technology business, should be something that like solves a pain. And that pain could be I'm spending 4 hours a week running the numbers for, you know, for my company, trying to figure out if we're still profitable or if we can make it through the next 3 months or something like that, right? And someone might sell me a product and he has a product that does all of this, and I don't need all the other bells and whistles. All I want to know is that, do I have enough money to last me the next 3 months for my business? And you can achieve that with Excel, right? Mm. You can achieve that with no-code tools like Zapier, you know, connecting Xero and, you know, whatever other, like Simple Pay or whatever other tools that you use, mm. right? So a person who understands a business figures out what is the bottleneck and how do I solve for it?
Mm.
And you could solve a bottleneck by either just removing it or leveraging a tool to, you know, like to solve for it, or building something from the ground up. But mm. do the easiest thing first, right? Mm. So if you want to service, you know, people in the township and you want to build a grocery delivery app, right? First of all, verify that there's a need for that. Use WhatsApp. They have it. You know, I think you said his name is Fikile. He did it. He leveraged WhatsApp. He didn't start with building an app from the ground up. So I think people kind of just need to shift their focus and move away from the obsession of building things from the ground up and rather start leveraging technology to build businesses and solve problems.
Mm. And what do you think of, you know, say I have validated that there yeah. is a need for something, right? Like whether or not you've spoken to 100 people and mm. like 85% of those people have said, you know, this is a really big problem for me. Once you've sort of established that in some form of a metric and yeah. you clearly understand that there is a problem and there's a market like big enough where you'll actually be able to build something sustainable or just take VC money until, you know, kingdom comes.
Yeah.
Because they think that, you know, this is actually worth banking on. Yeah. And like, if you actually crack this, like an incredible business can come from that. Once you've sort of validated that, what would you say are like the first steps that you should go with? Because I don't think the first step is to go on Twitter and find a developer and say, hey, Muna,
no, it's not.
I want you to build this app. I don't think that's the right way to go about it. Like, what do you think is a better or like a smarter way to really start to go towards building something?
It's finding your biggest bottleneck,
mm.
right? So let's say, for example, you are selling shoes, right? I think that's a really big business right now in South Africa. Let's say you're selling shoes and you're selling them out of the boot of your car. And mm. you know that you can reach like a specific area like within your neighborhood and you have like 100 customers or 100 customers a month. And you know that people want this shoe and you've validated that there's a need for it. The next step might not even be setting up a Shopify like page yet. It might be just getting two other people who can reach other neighborhoods, right? It's mm. about scaling your, like identifying the thing that is blocking you from scaling and then solving for that
mm.
until you reach a point where like human intervention is just way too inefficient. Mm. Then technology becomes a thing. But by the time you reach a level where human intervention is inefficient, you've got a business.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like people skip those steps so much.
Because we all want to be billionaires. Because everyone told us if you start...
Everyone wants to be Mark Zuckerberg.
If you start in your garage, you can be Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff yeah. Bezos and ignore the nuances that surround
them. What is the South African equivalent of that garage startup story in South Africa? Because I do think that it's a very different version, right? Like, we like to attach these American ways of thinking about the journeys of entrepreneurs and how we should help them and how they need to be supported. What's the South African version of that? Oh no, me and my four friends are in my mom's garage after she gave us gang capital just to like figure things out. What's the South African equivalent? And also, what does that journey look like for a South African entrepreneur that's trying to build a tech product? Because I do think that it's very different from what the American story might be. And it's very different from, say, any other sort of journey of an entrepreneur in any other country as well.
Maybe I haven't been paying enough attention because I don't know if there is, right? Mm. You know, as I was saying before we started recording, what I noticed is that, you know, people come up with great ideas, right? But, like, the companies that should be enabling them end up destroying them.
Mm.
Right, because you know, you come to me and you say, VT, here's how I can plug into your ecosystem and benefit. And then I say, okay, cool, that's great. I'm gonna pay you R1 million once off, and then just give it to me, right? As opposed to, okay, cool, I'm gonna plug it in and actually like grow your network, because the thing is that that cosine could be the reason why you you kick off. And if you look at almost all the big products in like in SA, like the Pineapples and Naked Insurance, and it's like there's a big brand behind them. You look at SnapScan, that were backed by Standard Bank. There's a lot of value that comes into that. Can you imagine the kind of like power you have as a small fintech startup being backed by one of the biggest banks? And
yeah, but it doesn't look that way with SnapScan. I feel like as soon as a really cool thing happens inside like these really big organizations, they find a way to make it uncool and kill it. Like you've seen this over many years, where a really cool startup will come up and then a corporate acquires them, absorbs them, or invests in them, and they're just not the same after that. And I feel like SnapScan's never it's never hit where it could hit. You know what I mean?
I hear you. I don't think it's as big as it could have been, and I don't think it can now with Apple Pay.
Right? Oh yeah,
because no one wants to be scanning QR codes. Like I remember, I was working with a guy from Germany back in 2019, and like he was paying with Apple Pay. I'm like, when are we getting that, right? And I'm like, but at least we have like SnapScan. It's like, yeah, that's efficient. You take out your phone, you log into this thing, and then you scan a code, and then you tap in this, and and it's like, wow, okay, cool. And then Apple Pay comes in, and like it kills that, right? And that's my point. I don't think we have examples of that like currently happening in South Africa. I was personally impressed by watching Yoko's launch event last week. I was like, oh, like this is great, right? Like, here are people who look like me, who started this thing, and there's enough interest that they have an event and it's being hosted and people are talking about it, and there's like, I'm interested. I can stop whatever else I'm doing. And I just don't think there are a lot of Yokos in South Africa right now.
What do you think it's gonna take to make it happen? Because and it's not just Yoko. I want to say, though, there are other startups that I'm looking at. I'm like, yo, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. How do we, first of all, let's do this maybe. Can you name like other guys that you put in that sort of realm? And then we go into...
As Yoko.
Yeah.
I think it would be the venture builder, The Delta. I think that's South African, right?
I don't know. I've never heard of this.
The Delta, I think, is like a really, really big one. I think they're South African. What else? I don't know. I really don't know. Oh, maybe the likes of like Take a Lot and Superbalist and those are people who've made it. But it feels like there's a big brand behind them, right? There's
a big corporate that backs it, and
you have mommy and daddy just looking after you. Doesn't count.
But it's man, it's still hard. I still think like we have to have deep respect for anyone that's able to
100%.
Whether, whatever support or whatever it is, like there still is some talent, some level of intuition that it takes to get anywhere close to success, in business, right?
No, 100%. I think there's definitely room for things like that to happen. It's just I personally don't care enough about the people with mommy and daddy standing behind them.
Okay.
Right? It's cool. I mean, I use Take a Lot. I use Superbalist.
Do you have a choice? Because when it comes to e-commerce giants in South Africa, it's not like there's a list. It's Take a Lot and then the rest.
Yeah, you don't really have much of a choice, but the choice is, do I order something from Take a Lot or do I drive to the shop?
Yeah, right.
And in most cases, driving to the shop wins for me because I'm impatient, right? Mm. I want Like, I want the thing now, right?
Do you think you'd jump on if they went, like, full Amazon one-day delivery?
100%. 100%. Because I do it all the time, right? I try to pay for, like, the quickest delivery. Because most of the time when I jump on Tech a lot, and, like, my wife is the one who sees this happens, like, she sees this look in my face. She's like, oh, he's about to buy it. Right, I just saw something I'm excited about, and I want it now.
Yeah,
and some of those things I might use like the first 2 days, and then not use again. Right, but I'm excited, and you know, I want to have it, and yeah. Having to wait a couple of days to get it kind of just kills that momentum for me.
Yeah, there's a few parts of like I think South Africans' lives where it's just like the technology is just not where it needs to be able to be. Disproportionately better in offering you value than the traditional way of doing things. So like that Take a Lot example, you go on there to see the price and see the features, then you go to the store to try and actually buy it. Because you're just thinking, okay, 5 days, 7 days, oh, I must wait, and then I must be at home at a specific time to wait for this guy, and I don't know, you know, there's too much like unpredictability in that experience to be able to offer disproportionate value.
Yeah, the experience is terrible, right? So my wife is extremely obsessed with having a house unique, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to buy chairs recently that like only one place sells them in the country,
mm-hmm.
right? Naturally, you can find them on Take A Lot, but I ordered from Take A Lot. They said like 21 days or something like that to deliver. And I was like, cool, I'll wait for it. And 2 days before the chairs were supposed to be delivered, the order was cancelled.
What?
Right. And I ended up calling the company somewhere like deep in Joburg. I was scared of going there, but like my wife wants those chairs, so I have to get them, right? And the guy said they do delivery, but I'm like, I don't trust your website, my dude, right? Like, I don't know if I can pay that kind of money to get this chairs.
Do you feel yourself be like judgmental about you know people's products when they share a link for their business? Hey, here's my website. Here's my store. You just like wait.
What's
happening here?
All the time. Other developers like judge me and shame me on Twitter for saying this is ugly. I don't want to use it. Right. The thing is that like. I feel like if you don't care enough about how your website or your app looks, how can I trust that you care enough about protecting my credit card information? It just doesn't translate, right? And I end up having to drive to deep in Joburg and pay for these things in cash and pick them up because like I really wanted them. And I think that's the choice between do you use like, you know, Take A Lot or do you go to the shops? And I just don't know if we have any of like those kind of products existing in the country. There are a lot of people who want to succeed, right? Like I'm looking at these few people and I'm like, if I had money, I'd invest in what you're doing. You know, you look at, you know, there's a guy, Jose Kosi, he's working on something called Round a Fire, which is a children's...
I know Round a Fire. Right? You know, like, one of the best things that's happened in my life is being part of the judges for MTN App of the Year Awards.
Yeah.
Because without that competition, I don't think I'd have as much view of the landscape as most people do. Yeah. I think that there's just, you know, every now and then I realize just how much work is happening that people just don't see.
Yeah.
And it's mainly just because most of these people that are building really great products might not have the budgets to put 100,000 rand into a Twitter ad or a Facebook ad or Instagram ad. They mostly relying on like community and like grassroots. Check out this app. You saw it. Okay, now share it with the people around you and try and spread it organically.
And it's difficult because the customers might not even be on Twitter.
Exactly.
Right. You look at like, you know, Round a Fire. There's Angula. You know, coming up now, there's More Wash. There's an app called Book Village. These are things that like are solving literacy problems in South Africa. Well, that barring More Wash, right? I feel like we have an education crisis. So people are coming into that place and kind of like solving for it. I want those people to win, right? I wouldn't advise them to go and put like 100 grand on a Twitter ad.
Oh, no, I wouldn't either.
I don't think the people that they try and target are on Twitter.
Besides that, I don't believe in Twitter as an acquisition channel. I don't think of Twitter as an acquisition channel. I think of Twitter as being a community platform, mostly for your customers to engage with your brand and for your brand to engage with your customers, but not necessarily from a sales perspective. I don't think people are on Twitter to buy products. They are there maybe to discover them in an organic way through the community that's built around them.
Yeah.
But I don't think of it as being like, I'm not on Twitter thinking, maybe I'll find something I want to buy.
You're right. And you're not the first to say, a lot of people have said, you know, when you want to start selling, go to LinkedIn. And I don't know if that's the right platform as well.
Look, I think you have a bigger chance or a better chance. But I also just hate LinkedIn as a product.
Yeah, me too.
I find it disgusting.
It's become this weird thing. Don't get me started on LinkedIn. You go into a post and you go back and like the what you're looking at is gone, and everyone's just telling stories of how I went to an interview and the dog was the interviewer. It's a weird place. Right?
But like going back to like you judging people's products, right?
Yeah.
So when you see, you know, someone's website or whatever, what do you think are some of the hallmark? You know, it's obviously difficult to just, you know, blanket statement these things, but what do you look for in an experience to say, you know what, I feel confident enough to use this product?
It depends on what the product's offering, right? Mm. So if it's something that wants my credit card information, I need to have some sort of sense of safety and security, right? I need to get the sense that you care, right? Mm. And that is like things being laid out well, like, you know, seeing that green, you know, secure thing, some information about how your product is secure and all of that. I need to get a sense that you didn't just, you know, put this together over a weekend, right? Mm. If I'm putting like my credit card information in it. But not all products require you to do something like that. Mm. Like I said, I think MoWash is one of my favorite products right now in the country. And I message Ayanda almost all the time. And like, when is the new app? Because there's a bug in your app, right? Mm. It crashes when I do this. But that hasn't stopped me from using it. Because the value I derive from it is like beyond like what the app looks like. It's, I know that, okay, cool, I might need to kind of jump over a few hoops to avoid that little problem that they haven't solved yet.
Mm.
But once I've done that, at the time that I booked, I have people coming to my house, washing my car while I play FIFA or work or do anything else. And then like the car looks brand new afterwards. And like that value for me is like, I can overlook some things on the product. So it's about the value that you're offering, right? If I feel like the value outweighs the risk, I'll probably like overlook some of the mistakes you might have made.
Yeah. And when I always think about this from also just entrepreneurs, you know, creators that might not be as technically, you know, adept, right? Like you're not going as deep as, you know, coding the whole thing yourself.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about no code tools, right? And like maybe we can have a conversation about that. Is just what is that space and what does it enable in terms of the future of building products and how entrepreneurs can leverage these things?
Like a lot. I'm also excited about the no code space or low code space, right?
Maybe just explain it as well.
Cool. So you know, in most cases, if you want to build something, so let's say like you want to build a to-do list, right? You want to get a developer and they're going to, you know, take out the IDE blank page and start building this thing. They'll ask you questions. Do you want an Android app? Do you want, do you want an iOS app or things like that? Then they build, they write almost like every piece of code from the ground up. They might leverage libraries and whatnot, but it's highly technical, right? Mm. And obviously it takes more time, more room for mistakes, and naturally more expensive, right? But then there's some tools that are low code. What that means is that there's some reusable modules that have been built, right? So, you know, you want an ability to log in. Someone has already built the entire login flow. I mean, you can use like the likes of Auth0 and like AWS Cognito, whatever. They've built in these predefined UIs and you can just kind of plug it in. So that's a bit low code. There's some code there, but not as much as you would building something from the ground up. And then you have like no code platforms as well. You know, the likes of what do you call this? Microsoft Power Apps, right? You don't need to be a developer to, you know, to get started. As long as you have the licenses and all of that, you can like can really like put something together. Because if you realize, okay, cool, I have a spreadsheet, and maybe it's more low code than no code, but like I have a spreadsheet and I can attach it to this and I can whip up an app, and it helps for little automations that people have, right? I think there's a lot of opportunities there, and I've seen a few companies in South Africa invest in low code and no code, because it means that they can get to the product validation much faster than someone who wants to build something from the ground up, right? It's like the whole podcast example again, right? If or maybe not a podcast, let's say a website, right? If a code example of building a website is like, you know, creating an HTML page and starting with the tags and, you know, what the search engine optimization you need to think about, what fields and everything, like defining from scratch, like literally like building from scratch. But then you could use something like Squarespace, right? In that case, you don't care about building from the ground up or what the technology is. You care about the content you want to place on the website. And that's the difference between, you know, no code and code.
So do you think of something like a Shopify, like a WordPress, as being no code as well?
Shopify, yeah. I absolutely love Shopify.
No, I'm a fan, man.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the fact that you can build a online store, have all the checks and balances from payments to logistics to, you know, declarations, whatever it is, unless, so we've actually tried to do this, right? So me and my friends have an e-commerce lab where we build stores for other people, but also just like are running multiple experiments, doing sort of online, online stores. And we did this, there was one store where you built like the whole thing in like 3 hours. You didn't, like everything from start to finish, everything was in there and it was done. And no one had to code shit.
No one had to deal with, oh, what HTML tag do I use here?
I know nothing about HTML.
And that's the great thing as well, right? Because most of the time when someone comes to you and they want an e-commerce store, they want to sell the product. They don't care about whether this thing's written in HTML and Python, and they don't care. And developers will be, you know, like out there debating Yarn is better than NPM. No one cares, right? People just want to sell the product. And I have a friend who did that recently, right? You know, he's got a comic and he's got merch for it. And he didn't even ask me for help, right? He doesn't code. Like, I just saw that he's got like a Shopify store set up. He didn't care. Like, he went on YouTube how to create a Shopify store and get started. And I think that's what a lot of South Africans are missing. I think the people in the tech space in South Africa, I don't know, maybe it's the pride of I built it. But I think there's a lot of opportunity in developers helping people configure as opposed to build.
That's true. But don't you think that, like, very much like how brokers and economists like to use jargon and try and confuse the person that's on the other end receiving the information, developers might feel that they need to create this opaqueness about the complexity of building products so that they are not eventually replaced by no code. And I don't think that's ever going to happen, because I don't think no code tools will be able to ever get to the core of like solving problems where you need human beings and their intuition, their insight and their intelligence to be able to guide and like create and customize and like really ideate at a deeper level.
I don't think there's malice. I don't think people are doing this on purpose. I just think our education has been wrong. I think I think we've been taught to be obsessed with building from the ground up, and I mean that's the approach that universities take when teaching you to code. They want to teach you from the ground up, and people are debating about theory versus practical and all of that. I think this thing is a process, right? You might start off with Shopify, and then become big, and Shopify becomes way too sluggy and
Kylie Cosmetics, right? billion dollar business that runs on Shopify. So that's not possible.
look.
Or maybe it gets technical when you start building like a Superbless or a Takealot.
Maybe it's a bad example, but maybe you might want to start doing some things and the platform you're using becomes very limited, right? Because the thing is that the idea with frameworks or pre-built tools is that they cover for maybe 80% of the use case. And maybe you care about the 20%, right? And when you've got that kind of scale, then there's some sort of justification to build something like yourself. But in South Africa, I think a lot of the problems that we have can and should be solved by low or no code tools.
Yeah. What do you think we could do more to show people that they can also participate in this maker economy or like this maker movement to try and build products? You're speaking about no code and low code tools, and like that could be a really great entry point for someone to go, oh wait, I really want to build something, but I don't have the technical expertise. Can I try and do it through these, you know, new tools? Yeah. What more could we be doing to try and encourage more people to, you know, take a shot, like try and like build an app or build a platform or whatever it is?
I think we should educate people, humanize technology. And that's not what's happening right now. What's happening is that a lot of gatekeeping is happening. Mm. People are saying, oh, if you're not like this or you're not made like this, you're not good enough to be a programmer. If you're not made like this, or if you don't do this over the weekends, then you're not good enough to be a programmer. So there's a lot of gatekeeping happening right now. But if you ask the people in my life, I try to make everyone into a programmer, right? Mm. My wife did analytical chemistry. She's a programmer now. her sister wanted to be a pilot. She's a programmer now. almost every single person in my life, I try to push to some degree of technology. And that's what I've been trying to do on Twitter in 2021. You know, pre 2021, I wasn't very active on Twitter, right? Mm. Then Twitter Spaces came, and I was like, I think I need to counter the negativity that exists within the space where people feel excluded. I mean, I've seen you join some of our spaces and leave, and it's because like people that are talking about something that feels like, okay, this is not in my playground. I'm not the right person to understand this. And that's because there's no diversity of conversation. Mm. There's no like delving into like the different aspects of technology and the different entry points as well, right? Because there's some great people working in, for example, like user experience, right? I've listened to some people talk about how the lack of focus on cash in South Africa and in the African continent is a big mistake. Everyone wants to like digitize, but in different ways. Like the likes of M-Pesa succeeded in Kenya because like cash is king, right? And then in South Africa, maybe it was applied inappropriately. But
oh no, there's a very clear reason why that like didn't work.
Yeah,
South Africa actually has one of the best banking systems in the world, and because of that, I forgot what the accurate stat is, but 98%, maybe 85% of South Africans have a bank card.
A bank card.
Which is not a reality across the continent.
Yeah.
There's no one that has this statistic across the continent other than us.
See, and I think that's the problem. We're retrofitting other people's solution into like a place where there is no problem. Where what we should be doing is amplifying the different entry points into tech in South Africa, right? Mm. And whether that's on, down on YouTube or on Twitter or on Facebook or in person, like, you know, people should be talking in high schools. When I was in high school, I had no idea what happened in tech. I didn't even want to be a developer.
Mm.
I was top student in IT grade 10, 11, and 12, and I still didn't want to be a developer.
Mm.
Right? I wanted to be an architect because I didn't understand what was there for me in like in tech. And I had to find out through other people when, you know, when I came to Gauteng. And I think we really just need to lay bare the options that exist. You know, so if we talk of no code, like put an example, right?
WordPress. Like that's the most simple example, I feel like.
But even WordPress is a bit more advanced than I'm serious. Because the thing is that like when we think of code, right?
Mm.
We think of building like a product. And which is not always accurate.
Mm.
We should think about it as building automations, right? It's like telling a computer to do something. So you don't have to start at like building a WordPress type of thing. It could be you want some information inserted in an Google Sheet or some online spreadsheet once like money goes into your account or something like that. Right, and if you look at what the likes of Investec and OfferZen are doing with the programmable banking, like it starts to allow you to do things like that, where you know with very little code you could find a snippet online, you could say okay cool, every time I buy like from a fast food restaurant, like put this thing in a spreadsheet and whatnot. And I think those are the examples that we should be putting out there for people to understand. Like take actual problems, like talk to business people and like, what's your biggest bottleneck?
Mm.
Like, what's your biggest pain point? And how can we automate that, right? And find out, like, what's the least painful, least expensive way of automating this little problem that could, you know, provide a lot of value for you? And then scale that.
Mm. But it is like a hard thing, though, I think.
No, it's hard.
I really hope that people start to think about these things more consciously and like try and like push themselves into the space of trying to build stuff. Because I think the world will be better for it, right?
100%.
There was something I wanted. We diverted from something. I remember it. Oh, man. I think what was it? Well, yes. The question on, you know, you pointed out YoQuest being something that you really admire, like you thought it was super cool, and you didn't put that many people in that bracket. But how do we get to a point where we have 5, 10, 20, 500 YoQs? And we're not just talking about companies that do card machines, but like companies that are solving really meaningful problems that are scaling really significantly and like have a big impact on society.
We collaborate more.
Mm.
We collaborate more in the country and in the continent. What's happening is that a lot of us are building in silos, right? So, you know, someone is building a language platform in South Africa for, you know, African languages, someone else is doing the same thing in Uganda. And you find that if those two people could come together, right, like they could create something very meaningful. So I think we need to be open to collaboration, meaningful networking, and just idea sharing. I think that's how we do it. Right now, you know, you might find that I'm good at writing code and I'm a good developer and I can solve a problem, but I don't know how to sell. And someone else on Twitter or Facebook, at the coffee shop, at the bookshop, could have that. Mm. And the more open we are and intentional we are about collaborating, you know, the more chances we'll have of, you know, creating like a YoQo.
Mm. That's true. It's such a simple solution, but like it seems more complicated than it should be.
Look, I think it goes back to first of all us thinking that we're better than other people, and just not having enough information and knowledge about what's happening around us, right? Like you've seen my, you know, the Twitter Spaces I host with Sihle, and that came out of like a very simple thing. So you know, we work together, so we have something called a bi-weekly one-on-one. At the time, it was weekly, right? Where 15 minutes, it's a private conversation, talk about whatever you want, right? And you could say, this is what's frustrating me right now at work. And I'd say, oh, I've seen that. Like, I've experienced that. Try this. And then, in 2 weeks' time, he reports, and I tried that, it worked, right? And it's like, we should scale that, right? We should scale that where let's humanize, you know, technology. Let's humanize experiences. I mean, people like could see you on the timeline, Mesh, and think like, I have a question for Mesh about podcasting, but I'm scared, right? Mm. Because he's made it and he's like, he's up there and he's not accessible, right? But you've made yourself accessible because of the way you engage with people, right? You've humanized your experiences. And I think we need to do more of that. And that's what I've been trying to do. And I'm like, I'm 29 years old. By luck, I found myself being a CTO.
You look so old on your Twitter photo, bro. Yeah. You need to change your profile. You need to.
Look, I'll change it.
I was like, look at this older man. And then you walked in here with a fade, and I was like, yo, this can't be the same guy.
Yeah, and it's, look, for me, it's that, right? It's like sharing my mistakes, sharing my frustrations, my experiences, that, like, you know, being CTO or being a lead developer or being, you know, this figure that other people look at and like admire is not, it's not like some magical thing. It's like, I'm the same person who looks like you, and I'm here as a result of the support that I've received from my parents, my peers, and like people I've met along the way. And unfortunately, when we started, there were not a lot of people that looked like me and you, right? And the more we bring that to the forefront and we encourage that collaboration, like, you know, the better chances we have of succeeding.
Yeah. When you speak about people that look like me and you and being like involved in, you know, startups and like technology and all of that, it's not very common, unfortunately.
Yeah,
and
it's not.
I do think that South Africa is headed in a very dangerous path when it comes to diversity in startups. And one day we'll have the conversation.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be a nice one, because when you look at the, you know, very high flying startups that, you know, currently exist, most of the founding team is usually, you know,
yeah,
a certain race, and then also a certain sex as well.
Yeah.
And this is sort of, it sort of manifests itself throughout the entire team sometimes.
Yeah.
And then it goes throughout the entire ecosystem. What do you think of as being the landscape right now for developers and like people that are working in tech in that specific way? And what do you think could happen or we could do to try and start to change the dial on this? Because I do think that right now we might not be having the conversation, and it might be happening in very small pockets that, hey, maybe tech startups in Cape Town do have a diversity problem. Like, why are we not having this conversation more broadly? Anyways, no, yeah, I don't want you to answer that question.
Yeah, no.
Because I think one day we will all have to answer that question. Yeah. But today's question is like, what can we do to start changing the dial? Because I do think that this is going to be a problem in the next 5 to 10 years. And we're going to start like having the conversation in a much broader sense. Like, hey, this is a problem. And I want to talk about it now, because I want someone in 5 years to go back to this podcast and say, hey, Mash said that this was a problem. But like, you know. So how do we turn the dial? Because someone like you is a unicorn in this situation. It shouldn't be.
Unfortunately, and it sucks, right? I think number one is that for the unicorns not to dwell on being unicorns in the space, right? Because what's happened a lot is that, you know, when someone is the first something to do something, they want to keep it that way, because then it's a sense of pride and fame and all of that. I think it's going back to like humanizing our experiences, because it's a system that reinforces itself because the people on the outside think there's no way in, right? It's not possible for me. And if VT managed to get there, it's because of something that happened that doesn't exist for like for me, right? I'm the person that I allow, you know, people to know me as on the internet, right? It's a persona. Mm. You don't see the, you know, the pain behind the eyes and the experiences and the tears and all of those things that, like, you know, like came like before the success, if you can call it that, right? You know, when I tell people that back in, you know, early primary school, I was, you know, walking to school, crossing a river, carrying my books in a plastic bag. They won't believe that, right?
Yeah.
When I tell people that I was heading cattle, like in my younger days, and had no like ambitions of ever being like in Gauteng or anything like that, because my uncles and my granddad were like builders, where, you know, in the village that I was born and raised from, like they weren't likely to believe that. But it's important for us to share the journey, to share the experiences, so other people who are going through the same thing can start to believe that it can happen for them as well. But not in the unrealistic everyone can be a billionaire kind of sense, but in the real sense of, first of all, you won't be able to replicate what other people have done, but that shouldn't discourage you from trying. I think that's the first thing, to change the mindset of the people looking in, trying to get in, to know that it's possible, and to know how other people have done it. And number two is just to be kind, man. You know, people need to be kind to themselves. They need to be kind to others. When other people get into the space, like, let them know it's okay. You know, it's okay. We'll welcome you, and let people be free enough to tell you when you're blocking them, right? That VT, on this day you said this, it made me feel this way, and made me feel like I'm not good enough for the spaces that you're in. And if that was not my intention, I can say I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. This is what I meant. And I think it's that collaboration, the communication that needs to happen. We need to talk, man. We need to be true. And that's not what I see on Twitter. And that, you know, goes back to the tweet that got me here, is like the frustration of, I'm sharing my opinions and my experiences, not as fact, but as an opinion. And then a person is like contrarian for the sake of it. And then you just kind of like, oh man, like, and then you start going down this rabbit hole.
And I think that's where people start to go, okay, maybe I shouldn't be in this space.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe I don't belong. When people are being contrarian for the sake of it, and it's not because they genuinely have like a view that can empower the other person. Yeah. It's mainly just because, hey, why not? I can just throw this in and disturb you from the thing that you're trying to do. And I think, like, it's important to say that the spaces you guys are hosting, right, are super important. Not just like for people who already work in startups that can learn from what's happening across the ecosystem, but because I've never seen that many black developers in one space.
Me neither.
Me neither. I've just never seen that. And it's such a scary thing for me. And maybe there are, you know, communities that develop in these. I know you guys use Slack and like Discord and this and that. And like, you guys create these micro communities. I've never seen that before.
I'm not part of any of that. And that's scary for me, Mesh, because like, I'm at the forefront of this community. And I'm like, what if I mess this up? Right? Like, what if I do more damage than good in trying to let people in? Because the same things that you're talking about reinforce themselves, right? Because even though now, like, it's like this black space, and people are connecting, and we've spoken to people from Twitter in our spaces, developers, like, telling us about what it looks like to work from Twitter. Like, people's personal heroes have joined our spaces. Like, people who you're on, like, Plural Site watching the tutorial, like, have joined our spaces and interacted with us. But then certain things still reinforce themselves. There's still not enough women talking in our spaces.
That's true.
Right? And the thing is that I can't pull people and force them to talk. Right? What I go back to the drawing board and do is, like, maybe there's something that I'm doing that is not creating the platform for where people feel free enough to come and talk.
I do think, like, as long as you're creating an environment where everyone feels welcome,
yeah,
understands that there are no experts and there's no ego. I think the biggest problem in many spaces in South Africa is ego.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this culture of, I get into the space and I don't think it's my responsibility to open it up for others. Yeah. That is something that's very common, whether it's in the creative field, in, you know, finance, in, you know, product, whatever it is, we seem to have a culture that doesn't focus itself on enabling others.
Yeah.
So your role when you go into a space is not to say, okay, I am in, I'm going to protect my place. It's to go, okay, how do we open the space even more for others?
How do we make it safe?
Exactly. Like, and like, do you think this conversation is happening with your peers in this, you know, in this realm of like developers, developer communities, product builders, to say that, hey, we all look the same.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe you are like the odd one out in that situation, but like, hey guys, how do we change this? Because it's not okay. How do we, because I look at it and I go, this is going to be a problem in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
It's probably a problem now, but no one wants to talk about it. But are there conversations happening inside the space to go, hey guys, how do we open the space up to so many more young kids who are herding cattle, crossing a river? And technology could be the thing that really enables them to find the thing they care about. It could be part of their purpose. It could help them build something that could like really impact other people's lives.
It's happening. I think it's definitely happening. As you've said, there might be other, you know, Slack communities, Discord communities, and whatnot. What we're seeing happening on Twitter now with developers and you know, like other people in tech, UX, you know, PMs, and all of that coming into a space and like just talking, people talking about salaries and how disproportionate it can be. People talking about not feeling safe in those spaces. It's definitely happening. And there are a lot of people who are doing good work in that space. I mean, you look at Misho and with Geek Culture and Tiani, they're doing an amazing,
insane
work there. You look at Zandi from Girl Code.
Yes.
She's doing amazing work there. And I think what we need to do is to like plug into that, right? So instead of trying to be a Geek Culture, instead of trying to be a Girl Code, like complement those initiatives, right? And say, hey Misho, hey Zandi, here we are, we're happy to help, right?
And collaborate.
Yeah, we're happy to help. Like how can we help? A few of us, again, same problem that we're not any women. In the TED hack that happened earlier this year, we were invited to come in and speak. And for me, that was meaningful because I feel like I'm sharing myself and humanizing my journey, right? Mm. So other people can look at me and say, "Oh yeah, I can do that too." Like you know, I've been there as well. And it's unfortunate because like, you know, I've taken the decision to close my DMs because I was getting super negative on Twitter. I was being drawn into all of that, and I started feeling like maybe it's not the platform that I want to share on, but I want people to have access to me, right? But in a controlled manner where I can help or redirect them to other people who can help, right? And that's the only thing we can do to, and it starts with honesty. It starts with accepting that there's how we think the world should work versus how the world actually works. We can't suddenly change how the world works. We need to somehow plug into it first. And the change will come with us participating. You can't change it from just looking at it from the outside, right? Mm. And for us, it's collaboration. That's how everyone else, everywhere else does it. They collaborate. They work together. They create a community and have money circulate in that community, have opportunities circulating in that opportunity. So I'm a firm believer that no one owes you your dream, right? I wanted to be an architect. Mm. I'm a developer, and I embrace it, and I try to be great at it because that's the opportunity that I have. And a lot of people are the reason why I'm still employed. A lot of people are the reason why I'm quote unquote successful, right? So we need to first of all like just accept that no one's going to hand anything to us, but people, at least some people, are open to collaborating and sharing.
Yeah, and it sort of speaks to like the power and value of networks. I don't know how much time you have.
No, I have time.
Okay, cool. It sort of goes into like the power of networks. I think that startups are mainly just a cluster of networks, of people coming together to go, hey, I have this value to offer, you have this value to offer, we can come together and try and like go towards a certain result. Or, you know, you posting on like a Twitter platform and saying, oh wait, I have very little opportunities right now, and someone reaching out and saying, hey, don't worry about that, like take that down, let's talk about like your opportunities. And I think it's so important that people understand how important that is. The rooms that you're in, the people that are fighting for you in rooms that you don't even know about. How do you think about building networks and communities from that perspective? Because the community you guys are trying to build now is one that's establishing itself.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you speaking about people that helped you not fail, or people that helped give you opportunities, or people that put you in the right places, right? How do you think about building networks from that perspective? And how do you cultivate and protect that in order to keep it thriving in the future?
I think mentorship has to be organic and authentic, right? It might be that I meet you, Mesh, and I would like you to be my mentor, but then it just doesn't work. And it's not because there's something wrong with you or something wrong with me. It's just like not a right fit, right?
Yeah.
Square peg in a round hole type of situation. I think people need to stop expecting certain things from the world and like people, and just go with what comes naturally, right? Let things happen organically, right? Share your journey. Someone cares. I've had like, you know, people. There's a guy in from my old company. His name is Thabang Lidwaba, right? I was a mess, like, you know, when I was starting out, I was like an angry village boy who just, you know, was like just angry at the world and would like snap in a second. And this guy fought for me. I didn't know. Like, he was in boardrooms fighting for me and saying he's young, give him a chance and all of this. And he'd, you know, pull me aside, have a beer and talk to me because he cared, right? That's something that happened organically, right? Like, it happened naturally. He looked at me and, like, I guess he, you know, he saw someone he cared about. You know, in my company now, Sihle, who I host the space with, was my first hire. I'd never met him before, right? I saw him do stuff on Twitter and I'm like, this kid is talented, right? I connected with him, hired him on the spot, and I started to care about him because I started to see, like, I mean, he's not that much younger than me. He's like 3 years younger than me, but I started to see a lot of myself in him, right? And that's a dangerous place as well, because it's like, now you don't want to enforce your own beliefs and your own ideals on this person, but you want to share organically with them what you know, in the hopes that it helps them and unblock them where you can, right? And I've hired people off of Twitter, right? Like, you know, to come in, some of the best developers in the company, just because they shared what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I cared about what they were doing and I connected with them. And I think people just need to share what they're doing and like look for authentic connections. And there lies some of the opportunities for mentorship and collaboration and growth.
Yeah. But I feel like there's also that other side of where people are feeling like, if I share what I'm building or creating, I'm scared that someone's going to take it. And I don't have this problem, because I genuinely think that the way I think about genius or creativity or intelligence or all those sort of things is very much like influenced by Elizabeth Gilbert, you know, the lady that wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah.
She did this TED talk talking about just how, you know, there was a time in the world where people thought that people that were more, you know, talented, and whether creating art or whatever it was, they had this sort of like a genius sort of gnome that walked into the room. And when they were creating the stuff they were creating, that thing was there to help them guide, like really be able to do that thing, right? So you never thought that the creativity or the, you know, the talent actually came from you, but it came from this thing that came and visited when you were doing the work.
Yeah.
And you knew that if you couldn't do the work, the genius was not there. Whereas now we think that, you know, genius comes from us and we are the vessel. There is nothing else that is actually influencing where the talent comes from. I think there's a fear, in, especially now, where people think that, you know, I only have this much and I have to protect it as much as possible. Whereas developers, I think, have the more open perspective where it's like, no, you can create things in public, and like, even if people take them, they'll be able to improve on them in some way. Like, you don't want to protect your ideas so much that you kill them. How do you think about those things?
Ideas are cheap.
Very, yes. It's execution, though.
Yes. Ideas are cheap, Mesh. Ideas are, like, I've come up with a lot of ideas in my lifetime. And a lot of people have done it as well. So you know that a big part of my job is building, running and maintaining teams, right?
Mm.
And what I've grown to see is that something people can't recreate is the pulse of a team, right? You know, when two people come together to work on something, there's a pulse that's created. And no matter how much you try, you can't recreate it. And I think people need to realize that, you know, companies, people invest in people and not in products. And that, like, yeah, don't overshare, right? don't share the one thing that, you know, makes your product unique, whatever. Like, that's just stupid. There's a guy who shared about, like, how he blew a deal with Yahoo because of oversharing, right? So, like, maybe surround yourself with the right people to say, okay, maybe you might be oversharing here. But just talking about what you're building from a high level, there's nothing wrong with that. It might create an opportunity for you to connect with other people who are doing the same thing. So I think it's striking a balance of what is oversharing and what is the right amount of sharing. And it doesn't have to be developers. I mean, you share about what you do in the podcast space and your thoughts around that. And you know, people like me have drawn inspiration from that. I'm like, I'm scared of ever trying a podcast because I don't know if I can sustain something like
that. There's not enough tech podcasts. I want you to know that, especially focusing on Africa. So, look.
Maybe.
Look.
I've never thought of myself as a creator, but I think curating the ZA Tech radio space has changed a lot of that, because it's something I really, really care about. I never imagined that you could create a space on Twitter and like 90 people tune in and they just want to hear what other people have to say. That's so crazy.
I think that the shift to remote and lockdown and all of that really changed one thing that makes, like, it makes no sense why we were doing it the other way before. Yeah, it right? Like, how can you get 100, 500, 1,000 people all from their own homes gathering in one place? I think engaged. That the idea that, yo, engaged, listening in, commenting, chiming in, wanting to contribute. And we needed halls to do this before.
Yeah.
No.
And you had to pay a lot of money for those halls. And now you're doing it for free.
Like, completely free.
You talk to people, like, I'm doing this on Twitter. It's running off my phone. They're like, what? I don't need expensive equipment to do this. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy. And I think we shouldn't let it go. Look, I'm interested in giving back.
Mm.
Right, I feel like I've been lucky. Right, like I've been so fortunate to have not just one person but multiple people fight for me at the bottom level. Right, and I'm a hard worker, but I believe that it's more important to have someone fighting for you than it is to be a hard worker. It's
that power of networks, yes, man. Like, I honestly, I think that especially in the hardest of times, that's when you really realize whether or not you have a good network or not, right? Yeah. Like, just every now and then, just test your network. Just go on Twitter and go, oh, man, I'm hungry today, but bank account is looking light. Just see if your network is like, you know, are you guys active? Are you hearing me? I'm hungry. Who's sending the Uber Eats? You know, like, I know that's a silly example. It's a very, like, surface level. But I think it's important that people understand the power of having people that back you.
Yes.
And those people being in situations where they have the resources to do so.
Yeah.
Because most people, unfortunately, you don't have a network. So as soon as you say you lost your job, it's, I'm sorry. It's not,
and that's it.
Hey, this is what we can do. And I think that's where things like get really, really complicated.
It gets messy. Like,
it gets so interesting.
I think our view or our relationship with money as well, like is a huge contributor to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, I've thought about it a lot. There's a certain purity that comes with wanting to give back, right?
Mm.
So, you know, you look at the spaces that we host. You know, we do it for free. We don't, you know, no one is sponsoring us. We have no dreams of it ever becoming that, right? And you end up at a point where you feel like if someone else is going to like contribute financially to this thing, then it makes it dirty, because our relationship with money is that if you want money out of a community or if you want a lot of money out of something, then you're greedy. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very unfortunate thing to happen, because it's very difficult or near impossible to have a real impact without money,
mm.
right? And I guess that's what you're talking about in terms of networks. I think at a point, what you do or what you contribute back to your community sometimes needs to be tested, you know, to see if you know, people will be willing to buy your mic because your mic broke and you create content that they care about, right?
Mm.
And if I really care about the content that you're putting out, and I care, by the way, I listen to a whole lot of your podcast, then I should be able to say, you know what, if it's going to help you go back to creating that thing that I care about, here's $500. It's all I can do. I know it can't buy the mic, but I hope it helps.
Mm.
And if you have people like that, then it makes that contribution back easier, and it enables you to have reach and impact.
Mm. And if without having, you know, actually, let me change my thought. That's the ultimate form of validation for anything that you're doing, right?
Like, yeah.
If someone else is willing to part with whatever value they have to make sure that you can still create the value that you need to create, because it matters to them.
Yeah.
I feel like we don't get enough of those feedback loops where you can tell that, you know, someone really cares about something and you making it really matters to them.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you said about building teams, because I do think that there's not enough spoken about this part of entrepreneurship or anyone's journey in any way. I think if you can't build a team, you're fucked as an entrepreneur. There's literally 100%. No other. There's
you can't win.
If you can't do that, you are like, I think other things you can finesse, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's other things where you can sort of balance and find ways to navigate. This is one thing I think that if you can't do, like, you're screwed from day one. What are some of the things you've learned about building teams over the years that you've done it, and like, what has, you know, really kept you going in those tough periods where it is hard to manage teams and stuff like that?
I think a team pulse, as I said, is a very important thing. It's important to have the right people in the same team, on the right team, right? Sometimes introducing a different person or personality into a team.
Pause, yes. Don't worry. Well, please just hand me the keyboard there. Don't worry. I try to edit these as much as possible. I'm not a fan of editing, though.
I know.
I like I like the podcast to sound
like an organic thing.
Well, it is. That's the thing, right? Like, yeah. Organic conversations, the computer shuts off.
Yeah, good.
So, yeah, let's get into it, building teams.
It's having a right team pulse is important, right?
What's a team pulse?
So, like, the way people relate to each other in a team, right? And how they complement each other's skills and, like, personalities in general, right? So you might have someone who's a brilliant developer, but they're disruptive in a team, right?
Mm.
And maybe someone else less talented but a better fit for the team creates more value in your team. So it's important to be intentional about how you build and how you grow your teams, right? The kind of personalities that you want. I think there's a saying that as an entrepreneur, in the initial stages of your business, you hire for your weaknesses. And then later on, you're hired for your strength, so, you know, to cover yourselves. And I think the same rule goes for, like, a team, right? If you're starting to build a team, it's important to figure out what are the weaknesses that exist within that team, and how do you find the right person for, you know, like to contribute and move that team forward? And then obviously you reach a point where you kind of covered all the weaknesses, and now it's about scaling, right? It's about finding people with the same skill set so that they can do more. And it's important still to not be desperate. And it's hard, right? Like I think I posted a thread the other day about don't make decisions out of desperation. And my wife said to me that people will say you're speaking from a point of privilege, right? And I said, like, it's a rule I've had in my entire life, right? Don't be desperate. Yeah. Like, don't be desperate, because the thing is, a momentary lapse in judgment in building your team can destroy your team and your business.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, when you're speaking about just making decisions on desperation, I always think that the worst decisions happen the lower on your body that decision is made.
Yes. Right?
So when you're using your head, mostly it's insight and information and, like, really good data. When it's your heart, it's emotion, it's passion, it's purpose. When it's your stomach, it's desperation. And then you go lower, you know, it's getting bad.
it's crazy, because I used to think that the head office was here, like on the head, but it turns out it's not actually. It's more from like your core to your head, right? Mm. When you are composed, when you create spaciousness, you're in a better place to create value and to make better decisions, right?
Mm.
And I think it's important for people to create spaciousness in their lives, right? For me, I'm most spacious when I go for a walk, right? Mm. So I'd go for a walk with my wife in the evening, and we just walk around the complex and we just talk and catch up, right? Mm. And I feel most spacious because it's, you know, you've got the air and, you know, like the
movement,
you know, movement, and there's just like flowing conversations, as opposed to when I'm sitting on the couch and just watching Netflix, right? Mm. So I think it's important to practice spaciousness and to be centered, right? In order to kind of like enforce this habit of making good decisions. And when you realize that you have to disrupt yourself, because you can feel your emotions taking over, and then you learn to realize that feeling coming over and then grabbing it and letting it go, then you start to know when you're making a decision out of desperation, right? And I think that's a big part of doing a lot of things in your life, including building teams, right? Some of the best businesses in the world, they know when they hire what kind of person they're looking for. And they're not going to hire the wrong person, regardless of how pressing that position is. They need to find the right person, because the wrong person can be disruptive. And the same thing happens with, you know, like just starting up, even if it's just you and one other person. I mean, people might reach out to you on Twitter and say, we want to collaborate, but they don't know you, you don't know them. And maybe you grab a coffee and find out if there's synergy there. And sometimes it's not personal, it's just you're just not the right person for, you know, for me to do this. And it's more important for me to find the right person than it is to find a person.
What do you look for in a good in a good person to work with? And I'm talking across the board, right? Whether it's a partner, maybe, you know, one day investing in startups, or, you know, just like people that you want to collaborate with. Like, what are those things that you feel like are your non-negotiables?
So there's actually one thing I'm someone who reflects a lot, right? About everything, right? Whether something was good or bad, I sit back and I take stock, and how could I have acted? Could there have been a different outcome? And for me, the most important thing is for people to be reflective, right? For people to be able to go back and look at the situation from the outside and find out if they can be better or if they were better. Because when those people fail, right, they're not going to hide it from you. Right, they're going to come back and say, you know what, I made a mistake here. I could have acted better. I could have done this and I didn't do it. Those people are likely to succeed because when you work with them, there's a sense of psychological safety, right? You know, there's nothing worse than someone hiding a problem from you because they feel like you'll be pissed off when you find out that they didn't do things the way they were supposed to, or they didn't do the right thing. But self-reflective people are the ones who can come back and say, look, I made a mistake. This is how that mistake happened, and this is how we can prevent it happening in the future. So reflection.
Mm. And how does someone really cultivate that and have that become something that is a core part of who they are? Because I do think that, you know, the pace of life right now doesn't allow for people to just slow down, like take the time to just go, wait, what's happened? You know, what have I done? What's going on? Be present in the moment to go, okay. You know, before someone can even be reflective, they need to be able to stop.
Yeah.
And now the life we live is go, 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 fast, fast, fast. Don't stop, don't stop, don't stop. Hustle, hustle, hustle. So how do you even take the time first to slow down, be present in the moment where you really, really need to be, and then be able to start to look back and in a non-judgmental way? Because you're not speaking, the way you're speaking about it now, it doesn't feel like someone needs to look back and judge themselves, themselves, persecute themselves, but genuinely like appreciate the journey in some ways.
It's not about being harsh with yourself or anything like that. It's just about being true with yourself.
Mm.
And, you know, like true doesn't mean harsh or true doesn't mean hurtful, right? It's about creating spaciousness. It's about like finding moments where you disconnect, man. For me, I really find a lot of pleasure in just like disconnecting from everything and playing FIFA. But that's not the moment of spaciousness, right? The moments when I'm most spacious is when I have the morning coffee with my wife, right? Mm. We sit outside. There's no, we're not on the phones. We're not on Twitter or anything like that. We're just having coffee and having conversation. It's those walks in the evening. Mm. Where we just like walk and maybe, you know, have some water and I can say, you know what happened today? I received an email and I responded to it this way. Do you think I was harsh? Right? Because I can confide in my wife and I know she's going to tell me the truth, right?
Mm.
And it's not just her. It's friends as well. It's family. It's calling my dad and saying, listen, man, I think buying the house was a mistake. I can't afford this thing and I'm struggling and I don't know if I can sustain this. And then having him say, look, here's a plus side, here's this and this and this, how you can be supported. It's creating moments of just spaciousness where you can be true to yourself and like unconcerned about what society thinks, about what people on Twitter think, about everything else, and just like be like, am I doing something that I'm happy with? Was I happy with that interaction? Am I happy with the trajectory of my life? It's like, it's just creating, and it's hard now because we have like, we think downtime is watching Netflix or playing PlayStation or drinking with the boys or things like that. But like, we need to find like true downtime. Like just work in the garden. I hate it, but like when I finally get into it, it creates a moment of spaciousness.
Yeah.
You know, just like sitting and having a conversation with my daughter. It's like, I can't believe I'm raising like a human being. She's 11 and she's like just having that conversation and just like nothing else matters at that point. It's like moments of spaciousness.
Yeah. I feel like the world we're in just, you need to be very, very militant in creating those.
100%.
And not just creating them, protecting them as well.
I'm bullish with my time. I'm bullish with my time and my rituals.
Yeah. Because without those rituals, you fall into patterns that will most likely not lead to you moving forward in any way.
Look, it's hard. Like falling out of what everyone else is doing is hard. It's hard. I think you need the right people around you.
Yeah, and you know, on that, how important is it to, you know, have a wife, have, you know, a kid, having a present father, having, you know, a good network of friends? Like, how important is that to the things that you do?
I think my wife and my daughter are the driving force behind everything I do.
Mm.
Behind absolutely everything I do. I want my wife to be proud of me. Right, like I care so much about like what she thinks. Right, if you know, like after my spaces, I'm like, you know, she listened last night and I was like, was that okay? You know, like, do you think it was good? And no, I care. Right, I care about the kind of man and father I am to my daughter, right? Like I want them to see me as a good person, right? I care about making my parents and my siblings proud, right? Like when my siblings say I'm doing well at school because I want to be like you, it makes me happy. And I think I think that those are the things that give like meaning to like to life, right? Where it makes you feel like you're not just walking in and out of buildings for the rest of your life. It's like there's something a bit more, right? I spend a lot of time at home. Like I spend lots and lots of time at home, and I think the lockdown for me was a very good thing because then I could spend it with, you know, with my family, with my wife and my daughter. I could have, you know, that coffee in the morning and those walks in the evening and just like opportunities just to be present. I think it's absolutely, absolutely vital to disconnect from everything else and just be with a core support system.
Yeah. How do you think people should be preparing themselves? You know, how do you put yourself in a position to take advantage of opportunities? I don't know why this came up, but in my mind, I just thought about that because I think you've done a lot of work on who you are and like the people you have around you and, you know, the skills that you might have and all of that. And I feel like that all adds up to who you become, and that forms part of how you position yourself for the things that will come. So how do you think people should cultivate, you know, that ability to prepare themselves for the opportunities that will come ahead?
I think the most important thing in life is value, right? You know, you were speaking earlier about the value that you add to the community that you serve, right? The value that those close to you add to your life and the things that you do, right? There's some conversations that people have with me that annoy me, right? And it's deserving, right? I don't earn enough for the thing that I'm doing, right? I don't get paid for this, or I'm not getting enough of this out of that. For me, I've had to accept that no one's going to hand me like the life that I deserve. And look, considering the history of our country, there's a lot of things that have gone like differently that have disadvantaged us and all of that. But unfortunately, we can't really change that. Right. So what we need to understand from where we are now is how do we add value to something that we can extract value from? But you have to add value first before you can extract it. Right. I always tell people that we're leveraging each other. We're always leveraging each other. And the best thing to do is to make sure that you can be leveraged so that you can leverage the other person. That's how business works, right? Someone hires you because they think you can add value to what they're doing, right? And you agree because you think you can extract value from that engagement. So positioning yourself for success is making sure that you can be leveraged and that you're awake enough to identify the leverage that you can get.
That's so powerful. I really appreciate that thinking. How do you cultivate moments of gratitude? You seem like a very grateful person for the things that you've achieved and where you are now.
Reflection.
Again.
Spaciousness. I think the moments of peace, all the positive things happen when I create spaciousness. Mm-hmm. So I try to be very bullish about moments of spaciousness, because that's when I'm grateful. That's when I'm feeling positive. That's when I can tackle like a difficult conversation with grace, right? Where else, like the opposite is when you're anxious, right? You know, if you can't try to be grateful in like moments of high anxiety, right? If you were in back-to-back meetings the entire day and then someone messages you and say, "Mesh, I need you right now." Like, that's the wrong time, right? Like, the likelihood of you responding negatively is high. But you said, like, our lives are busy. So you have to create, like, you have to cover those moments of spaciousness. And in that's when I reflect. That's when I, you know, that's when I'm happy. That's when I'm graceful. And that's when I'm grateful.
Okay. I think we're going to end it there. I really appreciated this conversation. I sent myself a text of the title.
Okay.
I want you to tell me what you think of this title. Come for the product, stay for the purpose.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's
maybe deep. That's like the last question. Do you think you have a purpose and do you feel a responsibility to fulfill it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tweeted out of that frustration that there's something that I'm good at and it's not programming. I think I understand people. Mm. I think my greatest gift is intuition, and I think my purpose is using that intuition for good. Mm. It's connecting people, it's creating space for people, it's making sure that other people can succeed. Because somehow, every time I do that, it comes back to me tenfold.
Yeah. And I want to tell you, man, that's so important. We need more people like that. We need more people understanding that there's... You being here is not a mistake.
Yeah.
It matters. And you can contribute something. Like, I'm always tweeting this and people are probably, very bored of me. But, everyone has a role to play. And there are no small parts. And someone corrected me and said, there are small parts, but they are not less important.
Oh.
And I think that it means so much. I think the work that you guys are doing is going to be super impactful and important, not just right now, but in 5-10 years, when people assess the ecosystem and they go, oh, wait, we forgot that we needed to take care of the people that, needed to be taken care of. Like, you needed to enable a certain part of the forgotten population.
100%.
And this is the work that's going to go, oh, wait, but these guys have been doing it since that year. They've been doing these spaces. They've been building this community and no one was paying attention. I hope that those spaces keep growing. I'll keep attending. As soon as I hear C++, that's when I log off. No, I won't lie.
Look, we've introduced structure, and I think yesterday. Look, I think again, you don't wanna ruin this thing because it's growing organically, but we came to a realization that you can't let it run wild. Otherwise, then it's no longer meaningful. Mm. And for me, I'm grateful, man. I'm grateful for being able to enable other people. I'm grateful for being able to help where I can, because I feel like I owe it to the world, because there's so many other people enabled me. Mm. And I'm not gonna stop. I'm gonna keep doing it because I think it's meaningful.
Yeah, and it is. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks.
You can talk, it's okay.